President Obama and the First Family arrived in Martha's Vineyard last night for the start of a 10-day family vacation, much to some pundits' chagrin.
He said he promised to not rest until every American who wanted a job got that job, and yet there he goes jetting off to tickle his toes in the sand of Martha's Vineyard and probably burying his head in the proverbial sand, ignoring the fact that 14 million Americans cannot find a job, that 40-plus million Americans are relying on food stamps.
Okay, so that particular Fox News pundit, Alaska Governor Sarah Palin, might end up being a presidential contender. But still, presidents have been vacationing here in Massachusetts since the very founding of the Republic. And in just about every case, their critics have given them flack for it.
Lawrence Knutson reported for the Associated Press from Washington for almost 40 years. He's author of a forthcoming book, Escaping the Gilded Cage, an illustrated history of presidential vacations.
When we spoke to him earlier, he said you can trace the criticism of presidential getaways all the way back to our second president, John Adams.
The actual first criticism of a president for taking time off from the seat of government goes back to John Adams in 1797, when the Philadelphia Aurora, an opposition newspaper, noting that the president had just left for his home in Quincy, Massachusetts, asked why the president had absconded from the seat of government just exactly when the critical state of affairs had left the public mind exceedingly agitated. At one point, he stayed in Quincy for a full 7 months. And that sort of thing has gone on more or less consistently from John Adams to the present.
And how did Adams respond to that criticism?
He responded the way most presidents do. He said he could operate just as successfully and just as efficiently in Quincy as he could in Philadelphia.
That's something that we've heard in recent memory as well. If I remember correctly, George H.W. Bush said, I'm not going to be trapped in Washington, D.C. during the first Gulf War. I'm going to do my business in Kennebunkport because I can.
That's exactly what he said. It was on August 2nd, 1990, when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, right at the beginning of the first President Bush's 25-day vacation. And the president essentially said he was not going to be trapped in the White House as the way he thought Jimmy Carter had been during the hostage crisis, and that he would not allow a dictator to dictate his vacation schedule. So he went ahead, full speed, with actual speed golf early in the morning, fishing in the afternoon, conferring sometimes on the boat with high-ranking members of the administration about the crisis in the Middle East, but then continuing, coming back for a round of horseshoes.
Lawrence Knutson, you know, we're talking about George H.W. Bush, who very frequently vacationed in Kennebunkport, Maine. There's also, of course, John Kennedy, who was on the Cape as often as he could be. President Obama and, in fact, President Clinton vacationed both on Martha's Vineyard. What is the appeal of New England to presidents, especially to those who aren't from here originally?
I think you have to understand Washington in late July and August to answer that question. Washington is hot. It is notoriously humid. And sitting on a bench somewhere along Cape Cod and letting a sea breeze curl your hair is probably better than letting your hair be curled by humidity in Washington.
Lawrence Knutson, let me ask you, I can't think of a period of U.S. history that's so replete with tranquility that the president's leadership and decision-making isn't needed. So given that fact, is there a time that you think that a president would not be criticized for taking a vacation, or is this just sort of part of the burden that a president must
not
bear?
And it depends on the times. Franklin Roosevelt, for example, 3 days after the famous 100 days ended in Congress, and Congress went home, the president went to Marion, Massachusetts, boarded a chartered two-masted schooner, sailed up the New England coast to Campobello Island. At one point, he was caught in a fog bank, and the Secret Service lost track of exactly where he was. And Colonel Edmund Sterling, the head of Roosevelt's Secret Service detail, rented a fishing boat, found the president, and found that he was in extremely good health, happy, and there was very little criticism of any of that that I have ever been able to discover.
In the midst of the Great Depression, so President Obama today should only hope to be so lucky.
He could only hope to be so lucky, but you get that kind of criticism. It is an easy criticism to make. You get it generally from the political opposition. Ronald Reagan, for example, during trouble in Lebanon with the U.S. Marines, was criticized by Democratic Speaker of the House Tip O'Neill for riding at the Reagan Ranch in the mountains above Santa Barbara, California, and going blissfully along while the nation shudders and shakes. That kind of thing has happened really in every administration. Richard Nixon was the subject of a full-scale congressional investigation of the public money spent at his two retreats. It all came to an end when Nixon resigned because of Watergate, but the investigation was certainly there.
Well, Lawrence Knutson, author of the forthcoming Escaping the Gilded Cage, an illustrated history of presidential vacations and retreats, thank you so much.
You are welcome indeed.
Are you ready?
There are some photos from Lawrence Knutson's book of presidents on vacation here in New England. You can see them at our website, radioboston.org.
And stay with us after the break.
I think he checked all the boxes, you know, and he's certainly presidential looking.
Who looks the part in New Hampshire? Plus, the rest of the week's news coming up next. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.